Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy-to-use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Databook. My name is Samara Rosenfeld, and today I will be speaking with Janae Sharp, founder of Sharp Index, a nonprofit dedicated to reducing physician suicide and burnout. After her former husband died by suicide, she noted the disconnect with physician burnout. If our healers are not able to be healthy, our health system will fail. With a background in healthcare IT and patient engagement, she decided to start contributing to the solution. The Sharp Index addresses solutions to help healthcare systems quantify and fix organizational problems that lead to physician burnout. Also joining us is Dalton Ruhr, a data scientist storyteller. He is a seasoned author, speaker, blogger, and YouTube video creator who is best known for dynamically sharing inconvenient truths and observations in a humorous manner. His entire career has surrounded data and finding and sharing insights with others. In part one of this three-part podcast, we will discuss the factors contributing to burnout, common misconceptions, and technology's role in helping the problem. Thank you both so much for joining me on the phone. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm really looking forward to talking more about physician burnout and what's next for data.
I am doing fantastic. Any day that I get to talk about data is a great thing, and a day that I get to talk about something I'm super passionate about, like helping physicians with data, is an even better day.
Let's dive right in and talk about some of the factors that are contributing to physician burnout.
There are so many factors that contribute to physician burnout, and I think that's why we're still having these conversations. It's a complex problem without a complex solution. And some of the factors that people identify are stresses within the system of healthcare, and some of them are outside the system. Something that's consistently identified that really resonated with me when I started learning about more about physician burnout and researching this was that technology was a huge burden. People didn't want to be spending time at home with their families in their pajamas, sitting on their electronic health records, taking notes. People didn't want to constantly be staring at a computer screen when they went into medicine to heal people. And that's because my background was in healthcare IT, that's something that really resonated with me, that our technology is contributing to burnout rather than contributing to better patient care.
That's a great one, Janae. One of the most impactful conversations I ever had with a physician before, we had literally a brain surgeon come and address our IT team. And he started and just repeated the phrase, 3 seconds, 3 seconds, 3 seconds, over and over, and went on to share that he could write an order on a scratch pad in 3 seconds for medications, and then use that as a, why are you hurting me with technology when everyone else has helped with technology? Everything we do in every other person's life is meant to speed things up. I can pick up my phone and say pizza near me and get an answer, and I save minutes of time or hours of time finding out, you know, driving to a place, find out that they're closed. When on my phone, I could find out instantly. And yet for him, he's got like a 14-minute turnover time between surgeries and has to speak to families of people who are legitimately concerned about like brain surgery stuff. And, you know, the time that we added to his day to do that and the time that he had to then rush through conversations about life and death were really hurting him. And then he ended up closing his thing. It used to take me 3 seconds, helped me with technology, quit hurting me.
Now, is it the way that the technology is made? And if so, why is it like that? Why aren't tech companies working to expedite these things instead of just slowing down physicians?
That's a great question, right? Because technology helps us in everything else. That's what we've seen. In this particular case, EHRs exist to be able to collect data. And that data can then meaningfully be tracked for quality things. We can find out who outliers are. We can find out who cost outliers are, but we got to have that data electronic to do that. Unfortunately, the tip of that data entry spear is the clinical staff. It's the nurses and doctors. They're the ones having to enter data, where in other areas of life and other businesses, those data entry people were super cheap compared to the business managers and the CEOs of the company. In this case, the people entering data so that that data can be collected are the high value people who were there to serve others and help diagnose problems, not track things electronically. That's not the job that they signed up for, but unfortunately it's tough. Workstations are shared with people, and because of HIPAA laws, obviously those workstations have to be closed or logged out. And so somebody's got to log in, even if it's just a badge swipe. They got to enter a password. They've got to search for that patient's record. They've got to find the right electronic order, and then they have to input it. And then somebody's got to come back to them later to sign off on certain things. So there's just steps of doing things electronically.
I'd like to add to that just to say, why isn't technology helping us, and why that why is really important. But it's also important to look at some technology is helping people, and some companies are doing great work in this space. They're working to reduce physician burden. You're looking at a very complex system. And I like to think about it from like a workforce perspective. The company that we hire to do our call routing for an organization isn't the same company you necessarily hire to do your payroll. And in healthcare, you have those different needs. People want to get paid, which means you should record your work. People want patients to be safe, which means that should be standardized. And regulating an industry for safety or for standardization to make sure people get paid, that means more paperwork. And we haven't worked out the sweet spot where people are satisfied with that paperwork burden, but also we haven't really worked out allowing people, physicians and nurses, to work at the top of their license, to do the activities that bring them the most value. And technology has just been dumped on them with all the requirements without enough conscious thought about which technology should be assigned to which person and how to maximize healthcare for everyone with that.
Right. So there's a big implementation issue here too.
Yeah. And they've also found, if you look at data from research organizations like KLAS, they've said when you invest more in implementation and in training, you have better satisfaction. So part of it is, if you implement a system without enough conscious work and thought about how it's going to work and who's going to do what, you end up with dissatisfied people. That being said, a lot of healthcare is working on margins that don't allow a lot of time. We've already seen that there's a shortage of physicians in many areas. So you're working with an overburdened population who doesn't actually have time to do more, and telling them, hey, if you just did more, this would be great.
Dalton, I know that you work as a data scientist with the SHARP Index and you're collecting data online. Do these types of information gathering tools help physicians?
Well, that's a double question there, because that's part of the issue with the technology, right? For data scientists like me, we say, oh my gosh, I am so glad we're collecting this data and I can look and find geometric mean lengths of stays and outliers and global health quality measurements because I have data. For the physicians, part of the problem is the lack of analytics internally to help them understand the value, right? If we actually did something with that data internal to the health systems, it could say, Dr. Janae, oh my gosh, do you realize your mortality rates have gone down, blah, 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 because of this? Do you realize you're in the top 2% in the country in this area? That could help. Unfortunately, that kind of feedback isn't there. In terms of collecting data, it's another data point for us to get these people to kind of, in an anonymous way, let others know how they're feeling about this. In the ideal world, we could tie that with data within the EHR to show this person that feels burned out has been working 115 hours a week. Based on their time card activity, and they're in the EMR, 8 hours a day after their work hours because they've logged out or something and they're in at home. And so there are ways then that within the systems themselves, there's audits and we need to tie that data with self-reported data as well. But even the self-reported data, it's super interesting. One of the things that we found was asking them questions and there was a scale that would say, hey, based on this amount, you are really, really bad or like really, 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 really bad. Do you want help? And once they crossed a certain threshold, they stopped asking for help. They didn't want to be contacted. They didn't want help, which to me is kind of that it's a burnout indicator. You've just lost hope. And when you lose hope, that's a real sign of trouble, right? We're just inherently, as humans, we want to hope. One of the things going around online today is about this American Idol singer, Doug Kuiker, who's the garbage man from Alabama. And when they asked him, why are you here? You've got no background. You have no formal training in singing. His answer was, I want my daughter to know you can accomplish anything. And that, I think, is just inherent to what humans want and what we believe. And once you reach that point where you think nothing I do matters anyway, I think that's a danger sign. And we've definitely crossed that line with this epidemic. I would almost liken this to the issue with veterans. They go and they serve the country, they follow orders, and then they come home and the country boos them. They throw stuff at them. They tell them that they're killers. And they lose hope. They're like, well, what's my life for then? What did I do? And that's kind of the battle I think we're seeing with healthcare and not only the tech causing more hours, but the constant chatter in the media about how healthcare system is, too expensive and it should be cheaper and everybody should get care for free. And that, I think it's all a combination for them. So every data point that we have to collect, I think, is super valuable for us.
In an instant like that, where a physician is indicating that they're doing really bad or that they stop responding when they get to a certain point, what do you do? Does someone step in? What happens there?
I think that's a great question. I think I should go back and explain a little bit more too about why we decided to have it be self-reported data for some of the tools and also what that process looks like. Our number one goal is to protect physicians. And that means also allowing them to be honest and allowing them to share things in confidence. So if they share something through the questionnaire, we want them to know that their provider, their boss is never going to find out. And that's important because when you're looking at asking people how they are with their mental health at work, that can impact you. If you're saying, I'm really unhappy, I don't want to work. And we don't want to cross that boundary. So when people report different things, you have a different ability to share, like who you would share it with and who you wouldn't share it with. Everything is voluntary. What we're looking for with those tools will connect people with help, but we're also looking for trends. Like knowing that knowing that people who are very burned out don't want help is something that's common in mental health. Like, we know that if you're really doing poorly, it's hard for you to reach out. And that's important for systems to know, because then they'll have tools to identify those people and have an outreach program that they design. So what we do versus what a healthcare organization or an employer or a mental health professional does will be something different. We wanted to make sure that we're getting honest feedback, and we wanted to also make sure that people knew that that wasn't going to be reported. Like what Dalton said, a lot of healthcare organizations are, you know, they're starting to make tools to track physician well-being. Someone like Cerner, who's looking at physician performance, and healthcare organizations do have programs to target struggling physicians and to improve things. Those are employment things. They're great. We know that some people, when they're really struggling, they conceal that. And that's something that needs to be addressed in healthcare. And that's something that we can definitely help with. Maybe that's a non-answer, just saying, like, we're not going to violate someone's trust, but knowing that those things exist is important. So what we do, we don't claim to say, like, all of this is IRB approved. All of this is something that we could publish in a medical journal, but we're looking for trends that are significant. That would be something we need to look at as a society and as a group. Let's say, you know, that certain groups of physicians are self-reporting that things aren't going well. For example, we look at technology. Physicians self-report that technology does not contribute to their workflow. Further research says, well, it's actually, you know, administrative burden, it's these other things. So you have these back and forth with research, you know, what's at fault, what to do with it. Those initial questions, the point is to find self-reported trends so that you could design a better study. It's important to realize when you're dealing with self-reported data from people who self-identify as a physician, take the data for what it is. You know, you can, we've heard tons of stories about malicious ad campaigns that have, I mean, not even malicious, but like very targeted ad campaigns for spreading misinformation. And I like to think of some of the reporting, not the reporting, some of the data about physician burnout and about the healthcare system in general is similar to that. Like, we are saying a system isn't doing well, and the people with the strongest voices and the most power within that system, they did well in the system. So asking them to dismantle the medical industrial complex that benefited them, it's going to be a stretch. But if we are outside of that saying, look, a lot of people are saying they're unhappy, that conversation enters the narrative. And those are important. The more we can encourage honest narrative, the better.
That's a great point, Janae. Definitely, if you're listening and you're thinking about taking a sharp index survey, understand it is completely confidential. If you don't check a box saying you would like someone to contact you, you're not going to be contacted. What we're trying to do with this data is put things together to start conversations with others. Let's look into this more. This needs to be studied more. This is an interesting pattern. You know, like Janae says, it's not data that's published in a journal as the gospel. These things seem to be trends because it is completely independent and anonymous versus the anonymous studies you get with a link to click in your email, and you know that link has an ID as part of it that you would be tracked.
Yeah, there are some really interesting ideas about data science and about healthcare, and even about human resources in general. Investing in mental health for employers is a positive investment. But what that investment looks like for technology or for a healthcare decision maker, a CEO of a health plan or a CEO of a hospital, what that looks like is not standardized and it's not always clear. So we want those people who have the ability to make lives better for physicians to have the best data available to make those decisions.
Now, I want to backtrack a little bit because I do feel like we're approaching a territory where we're talking about some misconceptions about physician burnout. You mentioned differing results from research compared to self-reported data. What are some other misconceptions about burnout?
I think to talk about some of the misconceptions about physician burnout, it's important to start with the culture of medicine and how long education is in medicine. You have people who have traditionally excelled at school and who have been invested a lot in terms of time and money into their education. So they don't want to fail. So that you're not dealing with a group of people with nothing to lose. You're dealing with physicians or nurses that have already invested a lot and their livelihood is based on their success. So when we talk about physician burnout, you're dealing with, I think in healthcare, they would call you a very resistant patient population. Like you don't have a problem because you cannot have a problem. And part of physician burnout, the idea is that, you know, these are just people who don't understand the importance of medicine and they're too sensitive and, you know, they're just whiners. And that's a false perception, especially if you think about it, you know, medicine knows that if people never sleep, they have very adverse reactions, psychological reactions, very adverse physical reactions. There's a disorder where you can die from no sleep. However, when they go to medical school and residency, it seems like they've waived this knowledge and see themselves or even the system as an exception. And that can be both from a system, like a view of how important this work is. You're dealing with life and death decisions. So you have a higher sense of responsibility. And some of those decisions are very complex and very difficult that they're making in medicine. So physician burnout, traditionally people see it as a broken person rather than a system that is complex and not able to facilitate individual health. And I see that as the primary misconception in physician burnout, an understanding of what level we're measuring at. Are we measuring at the individual? Or are we taking that step back where we say, wait a minute, if all of my physicians don't sleep, I understand the health outcomes there. Why can't we flip the script and say, what can we do to maximize health? So I think physician burnout narratives are part of that same problem that we have in American healthcare. And that's that we're having sick care. We're putting medication on top of an illness. We're looking at symptoms rather than looking at what will maximize my health.
That's fantastic. Boy, we could talk for a couple hours about the difference in healthcare and sickness care. I think one of the biggest misconceptions about it, and I'm not a doctor, but I've just been so personally offended when I see articles suggesting that the way to get out of the burnout problem is through yoga, because I think that classifies it as, you know, like Janae used the term whiners. There's a difference between me feeling stressed because I've brought too much on myself and I should go walk or jog or do some exercise or do yoga, and burnout that's being induced by the system itself. There's always, in any career choice, there's been studies, there's burnout in everything, right? People just been in the job too long. There's too many negative factors on any one day and not enough positive factors. But the overwhelming numbers are that physicians are at just a completely different rate than everybody else. And then it was continuing to grow. And so I think you hit it, Janae, that misconception, this is just, you know, normal stress, just suck it up, Shelley, and deal with it. That really misqualifies the severity of this problem.
I agree. I think we're really seeing it from the same perspective. And also, if we look at it, I love yoga. So I always want to say, oh, well, I think yoga should be part of it. But you have to acknowledge that it's not necessarily going to fix a system that is not designed to allow physicians to deliver great care.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this first episode of this multi-part podcast. Dalton and Janae, I really appreciate your insights, and I'm looking forward to exploring more about this topic of physician burnout and technology.
Thank you. Patient Experience Symposium is a one-of-a-kind conference that brings together leading stakeholders from across healthcare to improve and enhance patient experience. The most influential thought leaders, healthcare executives, clinical trial operators, and clinicians will come together in Massachusetts from May 11th to 13th to exchange game-changing ideas and actionable strategies to enhance patient experience in their healthcare ecosystems. The symposium features a new track, The Role of New Technologies in Healthcare, which will include a session titled Telehealth, Improving the Patient Experience and Enhancing Care, featuring Dr. Joseph Kvader, and Digital Therapeutics, Combining Technology and Evidence-Based Medicine to Transform Personalized Patient Care, featuring Megan Coder. Attendees will learn best practices and find answers to difficult patient experience issues and leave with the power to develop an unforgettable patient experience. To register and learn more, go to patientsymposium.com. Together, we're changing the face of patient experience. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of Databook. As always, I'm your host, Samara Rosenfeld. Make sure you like this podcast, subscribe, and follow Inside Digital Health on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook to stay up to date on the latest health tech news. Also, feel free to follow me on Twitter, at RosenfeldSamara, and let me know what you want to hear on the upcoming episodes of the show.
Hey folks, this is Tom Castles, former host of Databook. I just wanted to drop in for a second to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by InterSystems, the engine behind the world's most important healthcare applications. So here's the deal. InterSystems is all about helping you overcome the challenges of modern healthcare. Their advanced software solutions can help your health system transform care processes for moving to value-based care, managing population health, engaging patients, and so much more. It's all driven by a simple mission: to empower care providers and connect care communities around clearly presented, easy-to-use, and comprehensive health information. I think we can all agree that our industry needs innovation. So that's why I encourage you to take the next step today. Reach out to InterSystems on Twitter or LinkedIn, or visit them online at intersystems.com.